I'm Sarah Costello. Today is March 22nd, 2016. It's 1:30 in the afternoon. I'd like to welcome Vice Chair Senator Diesel and Senator Stevens. Also, thank Carrie and Matt, who are the recording secretary and the delay operator, for your help today. Today, we'll continue consideration of the governor's appointees of state boards and commissions. We also have one bill on the agenda, Senate Bill 104, which was introduced by Senator Diesel. Senate Bill 202 will not be heard today, so if you're here for Senate Bill 202, you'll know that it's about a 20-hour today. Today, we begin with the governor's appointees to the state boards and commissions. I'd like to thank the nominees for their time today and preserving the state of Alaska. It's important to have Alaskans involved in this part of state government, very important. The confirmation hearings are often the only time the legislature gets to dialogue with many of these boards, so to help us better understand the issues that you're facing, we have this opportunity today. So we have the bios and the backgrounds of all of the appointees. The process today will be to bring individual nominations by board, let the appointees introduce themselves, take any members' questions, take any public testimony, and expect the nomination slide to be brought up at a later date for committee action. So the first board that we'll be looking at is the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. This is a five-member board, and the nominee is Robert Evans of Mill, who's online. Thank you, Robert. You are filling the public seat on this board, so if you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and explain to us your interest in continuing to serve.
Great, thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, so you can go ahead and begin.
Okay, thank you. So, my name is Robert Evans. I'm calling in from Mill. Born and raised in Alaska. My mom is from a small village outside of Mill called Chishmaras. My dad was in Minnesota and moved back to Mill in 2001. I grew up in Mill and went to high school in Yuma Creek. Lived most of my life here in Mill. Coming here down with my family, I have two kids in high school and two kids in college. I am a retired state personnel sergeant and retired in 2009. 21 years in state service, 14 years in law, and 17 I have done well in personnel better. Since I retired in 2009, I started to look at what else I can do. I immediately started working at a regional nonprofit called Square Incorporated. It serves all the villages in the Bering Strait region. I started out as a homeless development specialist for 3 years. We worked throughout the region, the Maryland suicide prevention, underage drinking, and adult binge drinking. We also work directly with youth on youth leadership and smart choice, focusing on alcohol abuse and awareness. So, I did 180 from learning and corrections to working in the social services department, which is a great learning curve for me. But, you know, going up and down, seeing that there's no alcohol advertising is a great opportunity for me to give back to my community, my region. During my time to travel throughout the region, working with communities, I've been part of not only leaders in the community, but work with the schools, talking about youth in the schools, and then just working directly with the community. In 2010, I was elected to my native corporation, for the Black Native Corporation, and for the village corporation. We have 2,800 shareholders. In 2011, I was elected to the regional native corporation, Bering Strait Native Corporation. We have approximately 4,100 shareholders. In 2012, I started a small business. I left school research on the MPP is in the valley in the 80 year known, so no better than this opportunity. In 2013, all Florida was assigned to the United States Regional Housing Authority as a commissioner. That's through the regional profit and nonprofit plan, the corporation. So to me, as I am in, I'm currently in the regional wellness farm right now, and I continue to work with issues surrounding farming. People know that it's all the community in the region. Also, I have four employees. I'm part of the Human Rights Association and a couple other organizations.
Wonderful. Thank you for that introduction. Are there any questions or committee members? Senator Stevens?
Yes, just a regular comment on retired for service and giving you a public service to your city and community. That's a really honorable thing.
Thank you. And I noticed that you've served since 2013 on the ABC board. Thank you.
Can
you explain to me
how
you see the challenges that the board faces
every year? Sure, thank you. So, in 2013, I filled a vacancy. I am a rural representative from the public sector. I really didn't know much about the ABC board in 2013. So there was a learning curve.
Thank you very much, Mr. Evans, for making yourself available and for sharing your experience on the board with us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, we have the Beacon Commercial Services Board. And this is a nine-member board. The nominee that we'll hear from today is Nicholas Jackson of Buffalo, who's a private, private landholder state. Yep, if you're online, if you can introduce yourself to the community, thank you for joining us. We have a couple of points and explain your interest in serving on this board.
Okay, my name is Nicholas Jackson. I'm born and raised in Oxford, in Boston, Oklahoma.
Thank you for your service to the state and your interest in serving the state on the Big Acorn Services Board.
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next three members, we will be looking at the Marijuana Control Board. This is a new board that was created with the passage of our Council 123 last session. The committee received an update on the coursework at the beginning of session from Mayor Director Cindy Franklin. It's a five-member board looking for you to make appointments individually and take questions, members' questions, and then if there's anyone interested in testifying from the public, we will take their questions after hearing from all of the nominees, and we will take them first here from them as a group and take members' questions. So first, I would like to welcome my constituents, of Anchorage, Bruce Schulte. Bruce, are you available? Bruce, if you could just take a moment and introduce yourself. We've had you before this meeting before. We certainly are aware of your work on this today. And if you'd like to express your interest in continuing to serve, that would be great.
Thank you.
Ben Chair, Steve Evans, and the president of the company. My name is Brian Hannah. I was born here in Fairbanks, Alaska, at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. I lived in Alaska most of my life, especially for a period of time now, but I wanted to go back to the place that I didn't know. I'm truly interested in Alaska and her issues. I was a commercial fisherman. I was going up on clean water initiative issues. I worked as a public servant. I served as an island manager in Alaska. I was a social working parent for the past the last decade. And I've always been concerned about groundwater issues because I remember the cannabis community. I grew up in the cannabis community. I grew up in urban marijuana. Objectively, think of alcohol, and I have intimate knowledge of the cannabis industry. Been quite honest with knowing how the black market operates and knowing that most of the individuals in the black market are not violent criminals, that our business person's consideration so happens to be illegal. And I felt that it was my responsibility to take my knowledge and my experiences and help champion a legal regulated industry. I found that the government was responsible. Cannabis legislation, a couple of my colleagues became the state's premier cannabis community organization. Sheriff Schulte was actually the spokesperson for that organization during the last legislative session. We worked tirelessly alongside the legislature to position where we could on what different movement of the bills that we really created this bill is voluntary and current. And I feel that I brought a unique approach to marijuana regulation. I studied science in college. I thought it was very important to try to remove the madness dogma from the conversation by using facts, and that's what we've attempted to do during both our realization and as my work on the board is to look at the facts that we have before us, trying to base our positions on those facts. And then this was a very popular movement, and the proponents weighed very heavily on that, and I tried to take glaucoma into consideration. I have returned to thousands of comments on various decisions that this board has made or decisions we made because that businesses, or individuals who already know what we need to do. So I tried to provide a synthesis of research and fact-based decision making and use what in my best judgment I thought that the Alaskan public had actually desired. And so I would be able to continue this work on marijuana control board to allow the state to move forward with the really excited regulatory landscape.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions for this woman? There are no questions for you. Thank you very much. Your resume is pretty impressive, and appreciate you making yourself available to the committee today.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mark Springer of Apple. Mark has been serving in the rural state. Mr. Springer, thank you for joining us today. We'd like to introduce yourself to the committee and express your interest in continuing to serve on the marijuana control board.
Well, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mark Springer. I'm being called as the Apple Springer. Transportation workers in the tourist sector community, so that's the more upper level. I've lived in Alaska since 1976, and I will put my first order in Black when I say that I will pretend 1976 is not an empty contract. Sometimes I have to college, the UAS college, and I'm on the way to Indiana, which is home of the Bay. There, and lived around rural Alaska, at Tonkton Junction, in Hot Springs, most of the time, about 25 years there, raised my six children.
since we're making some history, we are hopefully building a new segment of the domestic economy that will, in the long run, be beneficial economically and socially to our state. We will come to the detail members. I think they can put a lot off the table. And also, we'll talk to the community, the professional staff, both in the parts of Congress and at the Department of Control Office and our counsel from the Department of Law. So we have our help. I have to say that I don't think any game is a board member, best board members. Anywhere near as hard on this as our staff continues to. So, and that's basically in no small amount.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spinner. Are there any questions of committee members? Seeing none, thank you again for making yourself available for your commitment to serve the state with capacity.
Thank you.
Next, from Sylvana, we have Peter Armonic. Peter is serving in the Public Safety Seat on Marijuana Control Board. Welcome, Peter. Please feel free to go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and express your interest in continuing to serve on the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peter Armonic. I'm currently at the Public Safety Seat. I'm a chief for 2+ years here. Before that, I was 18 years old and spent over 22 years across the Department of Public Safety. I did a new ask of state troopers, and the last one of my troopers retired in 2012. Great career. My purpose of being on the board is to look out for the public safety as we have a new industry, and especially for the youth in time of mental health, it will affect the vulnerable population. Since being on the board, I feel along with the other board members of the Disney Craft, regulations for the commercial marijuana industry, and it's been great and rewarding. I've really enjoyed it. I started working with the other members, everybody get along, having that.
Determine
and influence don't apply to marijuana, but there's other tests that do. You can still like the ethyl balance issues. There can be diabetes tests or all kinds of things, which is technical, but there's other tests for vertical gaze, and that's how your eyes function and how they track. And we try to get as many people into let's say the pyramid testing program, so we can identify one factor for being marijuana intoxication. And we have there's new drug regulations for blood or tab use, and we can run a prison through. So you can get some, you can get private type prisons, you can get some juice for balance. Basically, if you really need those, as some sort of a test, you can actually tell by the purple breath test that you know for alcohol, you can have an outside and see whether somebody's probably your field sobriety tested, whether some of them are under the influence, and it kind of helps your decision whether or not they're out there. If there's something like that for marijuana, I don't think there's some stuff out there that they're cheeks swamped, but I don't think anything is at the point where it would be
conditional use permits and zoning issues.
connected into where the industries will actually be located, how they're going to operate. Really significant concern from the local community about neighborhoods where these kinds of industries are compatible, how they will look, how it will be regulated. A lot of interest in having additional community regulations. Watching the state budget, a lot of people are concerned that the state will not be able to enforce its regulations in the monitoring industry, and so we're looking for the local communities to do that. So I think that's one of the challenges that we're going to face as we go forward, is exactly how the public is going to look at how the state regulates the industry, and then also how the local communities regulate the industry on top of what the state is doing. And I think the other challenge, as I think Mr. Martin mentioned, getting all the resources out and making sure that all the local communities have input to either support the license or the protest the license if they don't feel they have a license to issue or receive a state license. So I think there's a lot of issues facing us. I hope you continue to serve on the board. I think I have one of the 3-year appointments.
Thank you very much for making yourself available to the community today and for your past service in the state. With that, I want to just mention that you've heard now from all of the appointees to the Marijuana Control Board. The next portion of the meeting is the public testimony, and I would like to mention that we will be limiting public testimony to 2 minutes per individual, and that the testimony today should be relevant to the board appointees, so if you can mention the name of the appointee that you want to comment on. Otherwise, any comments on marijuana initiative itself or on the state law is not something that this committee will be reviewing at this time. So with that, is there any question that wishes to testify on any of the appointees? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to welcome Mr. Ed Martin calling from Hawaii. Mr. Martin?
One of your members is enforcing
and paid out over $1 million.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Powers, please call back to order next call. I said it's Senate Bill 104, which has been introduced by Senator Casilla of Persons with Disabilities Savings Accounts. This is the bill's second hearing. The intent is to resolve the committee substitute team members' questions on the disability committee. Public testimony on this bill was closed on February 4th, and we do have several subject matter experts available to discuss bills with us. I would like to invite Senator Beeson to move the new CS.
Okay, I'll move it to the adopt the CS for Senate Bill 104, version 09-02-7-02, / Lima, as the working document.
Okay, I will object to hear the explanation of changes, but prior to hearing those changes, Jeff Jesse's here with the Health Mental Health Trust, and Jeff, I think we have time constraints, so we would just love to hear from you first before we hear the changes in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the U.S. Mental Health Authority. And both the board and myself consider this a very important piece of legislation. And along with this, I was an attorney in my prior life. I was a senior attorney for the Disability Law Center for 15 years. And nothing was more frustrating than how people found who had disabilities, who wanted to do things for themselves, whether it was remodel a bathroom or buy a lift or remodel their home. And I had to advise them not to accumulate any resources because it would take them off of public benefits and they desperately need to maintain their Medicaid eligibility. This piece of legislation is a huge step forward in allowing people to do things for themselves by being able to set aside assets for legitimate purposes related to their disability so that they can be more self-sufficient. As if that wasn't good enough, there's actually a clawback provision so that when they eventually pass away in the state, they actually be able to recover some of the Medicaid payments that they made. So this is truly a win-win piece of legislation. For the trustees, this was a no-brainer. This was an effort to create a tool that beneficiaries could use to their great benefit for generations to come. And the trustees last week unanimously voted to fund the startup costs of $60,000 in FY17 and $40,000 in FY18, knowing the financial situation the state's in, understanding that a general fund system note attached to even a very worthwhile bill like this would certainly have some issues. They were very pleased in order to fund this fiscal note, and we certainly encourage your consideration of that.
Well, I'm stunned and we're of course excited about the news and appreciate all the work that the Mental Health Trust does. Some of you Alaskans and some of your work is well known, but appreciate your interest in this legislation. Are there any questions on this here? Go ahead, Jesse. Senator Stevens.
So we went to an earlier bill that there, and I was saying, right, so I said, I don't know, I thought it said, but it's, you know, it's particularly when I made this choice, whatever, I guess. Is that the tax deductible?
Senator Stevens, from the chair, I have to follow a friend. I don't believe the bill's contributions are tax deductible, but I have to defer to someone with more expertise in that area.
Stakeholders and their jobs research bring this together during
in the last few weeks and working closely with the committee. The broad strokes that I'm sharing is that the program is originally envisioned in the introduced version of Senate Bill 104. I worked with a program run out of the Department of Commerce, but in talks with the administration, that was found to be a little bit of conflict of interest because the Commission of Banking and Securities would be in charge of auditing and regulating basically the same accounts that they're administering. The work that the sponsors done with the committee moves that program to be managed out of the Department of Revenue. I also, instead of having a pure 529 approach to the plan and its individual tax benefits, I look towards having these state laws we provide in consortium of states to provide a little bit greater economies of scale for these programs. I'll also just highlight, Madam Chair, before the sponsoring staff goes through the bulk of the committee substitute. A change that was made is on page 16, version L, that being the CS. This is language that the chair's members are flipping to it. I'll just give you some brief context of it. This was a section that the chair's office worked on with stakeholders relating to foster care trusts. What this does is basically provides that permanent fund payments that are collected for young Alaskans when they are in state care, state foster care, are held in trust for those kids until they're adopted. What this will do, Madam Chair, is change the language whereby children, when they are adopted, the money that was held aside from that trust will follow that youth, will follow that person that is now been adopted until they have reached 21 years of age and are out of state care or have reached the age of 18 and are emancipated. The thought behind this language, I would share, is that this provides a bridge funding for young Alaskans that have been adopted and been through foster care. But also, with the meetings that our office has had, eliminates the unity between adopted foster kids and adopted parents that are rendering foster child to allow them to prepare for college or their later adult life. Those are specifically Madam Chair. Lines 1, which is actually technically begins with the section 8 on line 31 on page 15, continuing about it down to line 14 on page 16. So that's an addition to the CS manager. I'm happy to turn it over to sponsor staff to talk through the large structural changes in the committee substitute.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jane Humbrey, staff to Senator Patrick Kiesel. I think there's a little bit of overview of how we got from the bill that is held before you on the last hearing and where we are today. I'm afraid my height is a little bit less than taking up a little bit of that information. I'm going to pick up where this bill kind of took a change is when we needed to find a new home for a little bit about the conflict of interest from BCCED and that they would not be a proper housing for this program. So then we went to the folks at UAA who manage our UAA college savings that I connect us very successfully. We thought that would just be wonderful if they just had the Factory 9A plan and found out that probably was not going to be the case, but they were the grassroots in the field and they were actually waiting for a call. As I said, this 529 analog is hot news in the investment world, and we've been waiting for it in Alaska. So, in talking with them, realized that it's unusual for 529 funds to be offered out of any university. However, Alaska has successfully done so, but most of these family accounts are administered out of Treasury departments. So then we went to the department where they were asking for their assistance and we had confirmation from the commissioner himself that they were ready and able to help us with this program. So the information we learned from UAF was that General Price, which is one of our main contributors, about investment firms, had already been with them, but they were not interested in trying to do this kind of health and wellness because we did not have high numbers. We did not be in their business model for them to invest with. We're not feeding them here at 14,000 people. So that was the glitch that we got to see. And that's when James Lynch from UNF said that there's a consortium out there of states who are working on doing a group payroll plan administration because many states were also running into the same economy scale issue. They just didn't have enough people. So we started listening to weekly consortium meetings. We actually have Chase Raymond online. He is the manager of this consortium and has been helping us through managing questions all along. So that's the consortium part of the bill that is in there. And I think I can just talk to you about what new elements are in the bill that you didn't hear about last time. And then items that I have done that are in the same. Items in the restructured legislation that are included in the Department of Revenue and Grant Program. This language is broader language, so that the Department can respond to any changes in federal authorizing law. It allows the Department of Revenue to contract with other states, i.e., the consortium, to achieve a better funding scale. And in this consortium, the Department of Revenue is representative of an equal vote on the RFP that will go out from the consortium that will say this is the kind of program we want. And it will attract investment companies to respond to the RFP with their programs. And then the CMLS will have a vote in who we choose. And then, the language is by this FBF. Maybe you don't know, there's a financial institution here in Alaska that we want to contract directly with the Department of Revenue for this program. This might be allowed that as well. And these are the ones that I thought that maybe down the road this year. And nothing, I would list some things that have always been in the bill. The amendment to order an audit of the financial contractor, it will maintain oversight, determine or not renew a contract if they want to choose a different one. The business practice is eligible to apply for a new account. If the scratch suit can represent an eligible individual for a payroll account, it specifies who can own an account, the number of accounts allowed, the fees that you require to open an account, the guidelines and caps for the accounts themselves. The accounts can be changed only 2 times during a year. Kind of like, we have open enrollment. So if you think if you want to change your investment, you can do that 2 times during the year. But it doesn't mean that the sort of thing can be changed. The guidelines for the use of the account, rollover options, data requirements, accounting requirements, and annual fees. It does not allow the payroll account to be seen as security for a loan. It says that the payroll account is exempt from creditor claims during the life of the beneficiary. It removes the CRM obligation to guarantee the payroll account. It ensures that information regarding payroll accounts are confidential and not open to public record search. It specifies that payroll accounts may not be considered assets under means test programs. For dental assistance programs, they cannot use this as an asset against that program. Fees and funds received can be used as program expense account to run the program. Allows the state or Medicaid to file a claim or clawback if a beneficiary dies to recoup some of those benefits. It establishes the Federal Payroll Act law as a guardian law for the program. That's an annual account to list some exemptions. It requires the annual report to the legislature that began in 2018 and was set aside in the program for the been running a little bit past natural data before we had to report to the legislature. that's the general overview, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Beasley.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to also address a question that Senator Stevens asked, and that is the income from retail is not taxed. Our contributions to the account are not taxed deductible.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee by Senator Stevens?
Madam Chair, I was going to ask you to mention about the so I understand that the fund actually, if the state chooses, I suppose it would choose as a class, are there any property rights that the person is using to the investment of the heirs? How is the balance of those accounts?
Senator Stevens, I may have to throw that one over to our expert online, Stuart Spillman. Stuart, are you hearing the question?
Yes,
can you tell me your name and your organization for the record, please?
Yes, I'm Stuart Spillman. I'm here to talk to you about the health of the office of 60 of the
would you like the question repeated, Mr. Spillman?
I heard it last night, but I understand the question. Yes, there's a possible question. Is that the account charges to an individual to the state, just like other property, it is subject to the testimony of the parents of the community, subject to the Medicaid. All back to Medicaid claim, but to the extent that the account remains debtor claim, but the account has to be contested to be given the use of the shell.
Senator Stevens, I'm
following.
Any further questions? Are there any further objections to allowing it to exist? Any objection or any further objection? Okay, seeing that the committee substitute has been adopted before the committee now, are there any objections or any other questions on the bill itself? Senator Beasley.
Senator, would you like to hear from the individual that heads up the consortium that we would be joining?
Yes, Mr. Chase, Larry Winkle, the Director of Policy for Illinois State Treasurer, would you like to comment on the bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Larry Chase Winkle. I am the Director of Policy for the Illinois State Treasurer and the Illinois Treasurer's Office is the chair of the consortium. The idea of the consortium was decided early on after this legislation was passed on the federal level by a number of states that were concerned that the economy of skill would be better on more levels to be able to sustain a program of being able to give the best services to the community. Obviously, we were concerned that you know, we wanted to make sure that these individuals were able to get the services and get it cost so hard for. As a result, we have a number of states that have decided to work together on this in order to share services while maintaining the independence of the accounts themselves so that each state can have some control over how the program is administered in their state. I would be happy to answer any certain questions on the consortium, including updates on follow-up and memory
archives.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, please, if you could tell us what states are in the consortium, how many anticipate joining, and where the RFP process is at this point.
Great, of course. Obviously, the line is involved. The other states that have five initiated agreements to participate in the consortium are Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and then I'm going to say, working with Alaska. There's a number of other states. indicated here, and I have found other agreement with the consortium in order to continue participating on those calls. I'm not going into too much detail, but the current process of consortium has been drafting requests for proposals to some of them in order to provide investment and leverage resources for the program as well. So I'm very much looking to hear you right now.
Thank you. Any further questions? I do want to mention to our committee members that online for questions, we have Christina Vandergrift from the Governor's Council on Disabilities, and also Sarah Rice and Pam Leary from the Department of Health and Human Services for any questions from those individuals.
I was measuring my previous tax returns. I was going to give you a question if it's by listening. Because someone online may change, tell us about those tax individual tax benefits and how that works.
Ms. Leary, are you available to
answer?
Thank all your parties again for making themselves available today, and also for Senator Diesel's staff working so closely with other Murray staff like Donna or on the community council team. And our next meeting will be Thursday, October 24th at 1:30 p.m. at the community center.